Vadam ki jai, Sri Vrindavan dam ki jai, Mathura dam ki jai, Navadvip dam ki jai, Yamuna Devi Ganga Devi Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi ki jai, Brihat Madanga ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan Yoga ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Janitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol, All glorious the assembled devotees Hare Krishna, All glorious the assembled devotees Hare Krishna, All glorious the assembled devotees Hare Krishna. All glories to the Lotus Feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 19, text number 37. So this chapter is entitled King Prithu's 100 Horse Sacrifices. So what I'll do is we're going to read from 37 and 38. So there's two different purports. So what I'll do is I'll just read and then we can go from there. Okay, so with this first verse, I'll just chant it myself. We'll chant the second verse together. Okay. Bhavan paritra tum ihavati no dhammam jananam samaya nipur rupam vena pacharat avaluptam adya tadehato vishnukalashi yetenya. Translation. O King Prithu, son of Vena, you are the part and parcel expansion of Lord Vishnu. Due to the mischievous activities of King Vena, religious principles were almost lost. At that opportune moment, you descended as the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Indeed, for the protection of religious principles, you have appeared from the body of King Vena. Purport. The way in which Lord Vishnu kills the demons and protects the faithful is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 4.8. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chadushkatam dharma samstapanataya sambhavani yuge yuge. In order to establish the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. In two hands, Lord Vishnu always carries a club and a chakra to kill demons. And in his other two hands, he holds a conch shell and a lotus to give protection to his devotees. When his incarnation is present on this planet or in this universe, the Lord kills the demons and protects his devotees simultaneously. Sometimes Lord Vishnu appears in his person as Lord Krishna or Lord Ram. All of these appearances are mentioned in the Shastras. Sometimes he appears as a Shakti Avesh avatar, like Lord Buddha. As explained before, these Shakti Avesh avatars are incarnations of Vishnu's power invested in a living entity. Living entities are also part and parcel of Lord Vishnu, but they are not as powerful. Therefore, when a living entity descends as an incarnation of Vishnu, he is especially empowered by the Lord. When King Prithu is described as an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, it should be understood that he is a Shakti Avesh avatar, part and parcel of Lord Vishnu, and is specifically empowered by him. Any living being acting as the incarnation of Lord Vishnu is thus empowered by Lord Vishnu to preach the bhakti cult. Such a person can act like Lord Vishnu and defeat demons by arguments and preach the bhakti cult exactly according to the principles of Shastra. As indicated in Bhagavad Gita, whenever we find someone extraordinary preaching the bhakti cult, we should know that he is especially empowered by Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. As confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 7.11, Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravatana. One cannot explain the glories of the holy name of the Lord without being specifically empowered by him. If one criticizes or finds fault with such an empowered personality, one is to be considered an offender against Lord Vishnu and is punishable. Even though such offenders may dress as Vaishnavas with false tilak and mala, they are never forgiven by the Lord if they offend the pure Vaishnava. There are many instances of this in the Shastras. Okay, so we'll read text 38 and the purport, then we'll discuss. Okay. So we can go back and forth. Satvam Vishramyaya Satvam Vishramyasya Bhavam Prapajate. Sankalpanam Vishvasrijam Pipirihi. Adrim Chamayam Upadama Mataram. Prachanda Pakanda Patam Prabhujahi. Vaishnavis. Okay, so Saha, the aforesaid, Twam, you, Vimrishya, considering, Asya, of the world, Bhavam, existence, Prajapate, O protector of the people, Sankalpanam, the determination, Vishvasrajam, of the progenitors of the world, Pipivrihi, just fulfill, Aindrim, created by the King of Heaven, Cha, also, Mayam, illusion, Upadama, of the irreligious system of so-called sannyas. Mataram, the mother. Prachanda, furious, dangerous. Pakanda, patam, the path of sinful activities. Prabhu, O Lord, Jahi, please conquer. Translation in purple by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Protector of the people in general, please consider the purpose of your being incarnated by Lord Vishnu. The irreligious principles created by Indra are but mothers of so many unwanted religions. Please, therefore, stop these imitations immediately. Purport. Lord Brahma addressed King Prithu as Prajapate, just to remind him of his great responsibility in maintaining the peace and prosperity of the citizens. Maharaj Prithu was empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead for this purpose only. It is the duty of the ideal king to see that people are properly executing religious principles. Lord Brahma especially requested King Prithu to conquer the pseudo-religious principles produced by King Indra. In other words, it is the duty of the state or king to put a stop to pseudo-religious systems produced by unscrupulous persons. Originally, a religious principle is one given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it comes through the channel of disciplic succession in two forms. Lord Brahma requested Prithu Maharaj to desist from his unnecessary competition with Indra, who was determined to stop Prithu from completing 100 yajnas, instead of creating adverse reactions. It was better for Maharaj Prithu to stop the yajnas in the interest of his original purpose as an incarnation. This purpose was to establish good government and set things in the right order. Om Gyanat Mirandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Twam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchina Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanche Kapat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Patita Nam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, a good morning to all of you. We request your blessing so we can speak something on this august Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a very instructive chapter of the Bhagavatam for all of us. In this particular chapter, we hear that Lord Indra has become envious of Prithu Maharaj. So Prithu Maharaj is about to engage in the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna, and this will give him opulence, even greater opulence. And Indra is fearful that if this opulence comes upon him, Prithu Maharaj may be able to challenge his position as King of Heaven. See, Indra represents the envious leader. Indra represents the insecure leader. And it is very interesting Indra does not try to stop the sacrifice once. He tries to stop the sacrifice many times. So we learn in the previous verses that Indra disguised himself. And it's interesting, he's so audacious at this sacrifice. Brahma is present. At this sacrifice, Shiva is present. At this sacrifice, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is actually there. This is how envy can cover an individual. An individual can become so envious that they're prepared to misbehave even in the direct presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No shame, no fear, no understanding that I am going against not just an empowered incarnation of Godhead. You know, Prithvi Maharaj is the Shakti of Vaishavatar. I'm going against God Himself. So Atri Muni sees what's happening. Atri Muni alerts the son of Prithvi Maharaj, who's going to kill Indra. He's pursuing him to kill. So what does Indra do? Indra disguises himself. Now there's a number of different disguises he can take. But he disguises himself as a sannyasi. In other words, he disguises himself as the symbol of religiosity and renunciation. Right? The idea is that you wouldn't attack a religious person, would you? Right? The ultimate disguise. And he gets away with it repeatedly. But by doing so, he creates a trend. Let's look at this very carefully. We know in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, whatever a great personality does, others will follow. In our communities, in the world at large, we know, because we have the science of everything, that leadership is not just a question of skills. Leadership is not just a question of accomplishment. It is a question of character. Because people will not only follow the accomplishments of the leader, they will follow the character of the leader. It is very interesting. In the Varnashram system, there's subtleties. If you study carefully the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna talks about the four Varnas in the 18th chapter, a careful study, when he speaks about the Shudra class, and there's nothing wrong with being a Shudra, by the way. Every class can become perfect. Let's be very clear. But when Krishna speaks about the Shudra class, he describes their activity. When he speaks about the Vaishya class, he describes their activity. Because you don't have to necessarily have character to perform those activities in society. But when he speaks about the Kshatriya, he describes their characteristics. And when he speaks about the Brahmanas, he describes their characteristics. Because to perform those occupations, you must have character. It is not good enough to just have the ability to get something done. If you don't have character, you'll cause a disturbance in the society. So this is very interesting. What the leader Indra is doing, he's now introducing irreligious principles into the world. And Prabhupada says in the purport that now others will also act like false sannyasis. And it's so interesting. Lord Brahma intercedes. So the son of Prithvi Maharaj is continually pursuing Indra to kill him. But Lord Brahma at some point comes and says, stop. This is highly instructive for each and every one of us. When Lord Brahma tells Prithu, don't continue the sacrifices, he explains, do not become distracted. Do not become distracted by this person who's envious of you and trying to stop you. And he reminds Prithu Maharaj, you have a purpose. You are an empowered incarnation of Godhead. And you've come here to do what? What does Prabhupada say here? In this particular verse in purport, I'll repeat this. Lord Brahma in the purport, Prabhupada writes, Lord Brahma addresses King Prithu as Prajapate, just to remind him of his great responsibility in maintaining the peace and prosperity of the citizens. That means that wherever there is real leadership, great leadership, there'll be peace and there'll be prosperity. Now, from this we can infer a lot. If we know that from great leadership there will automatically come peace and prosperity, then when we look at the world right now, is the world peaceful, yes or no? No. Does the world have great prosperity, yes or no? No. So what does that immediately tell us about the quality of leadership on the planet right now? Good or bad? Very bad. In the time of Prithvi Maharaj, it was understood that when the king is proper, Mother Bhumi, being grateful for the proper leadership, she'll produce great opulence. The earth produces great opulence in terms of fruit, flowers, natural resources, everything comes. Because ultimately, the king was meant to be Naradev. The king, as it's explained here, is meant to represent religious principles by his very character and by his very example. So, we constantly have this idea of the insecure leader. You could say Indra is envious. Yes, but why is he envious? It's because he's insecure. I was very much, so for a living, I teach leadership. So I work for a bank and I teach the leaders at Global Bank. And we've constantly seen this. When people are in a position of power and they're insecure, they will cause great trouble. My spiritual master, His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he would often give seminars and trainings to world leaders in the secular world. And he explained something which is applying to all of us. He said that as an individual becomes more influential or more powerful, the more our power increases, the more our humility has to also increase. Why? He said that when you become a bhakta, a new devotee, you have a bit of influence. You know, people may understand he's involved in Krishna consciousness. He's involved in the religion. We respect that. He's going to live a very principled life. You have some respect. You have some influence just for that one reason alone. Then you get initiated. Oh, initiated. He has a spiritual name now. He's made commitments, vows. More respect, especially from those who are not initiated. They look up, oh, you're initiated. Oh, you must, you've got a guru. Wow, amazing. Right? Let's say that you decide to be full-time. He's in saffron. Oh, he must be religious, pious. He's given his life even more respect. Let's say you then get second initiation. He's a Brahmin. He's on the altar. He's with the deities. Oh my God. He's got secret mantras that we don't know. Even more respect. Let's say you get some position in ISKCON. That could work both ways. Okay. You get some position in ISKCON, maybe not respect. But let's assume, let's say that respect, temple president, GBC, oh my God, a big man, big woman in ISKCON. Whatever position, one is getting more influence. Now, there's a psychology. If we do not become more humble, then whatever's happening around us, we will think it's because of me. I'm so great. I'm so special. Huh? And what Krishna does, not immediately, Krishna's very kind. Krishna's very soft-hearted, very compassionate. So we're lucky. We're fortunate. But the compassion also means that sometimes he may show compassion through his bitter mercy. So Krishna's very compassionate. At first, he will see pride. He won't immediately interact. He will give people many warnings. Have you ever had this experience in your spiritual life where devotees kept telling you the same thing? You ever had that? I had that many times. they'll give you the same advice. Prabhu, I was just thinking you should do this. Many times. Oftentimes, it's Krishna sending the devotees. In the heart, he'll whisper to the devotee, tell Bhuta Bhavana, I want him to do this. My spiritual master left the planet since 2005. I keep praying to him. And when I pray to him, oftentimes he will send devotees to give me a particular instruction. So Krishna's like that. If you're sincere, he may send the same or different people again and again and again to tell you, Prabhu, I was thinking about you. I thought you should be doing this service. But if we don't listen, especially if Krishna is sending a message of something that we need to change, to stop doing, if we don't listen, at a particular point, he says, okay, Maya will now have to give you the lesson. So if we get more and more influence and we don't become more and more humble, we start to take ownership. We think, I'm great. These things are happening, it's because I'm great. And then what happens is, Krishna takes away his protection and Maya will come to humble us. In the Western world, there is this saying that pride comes before a fall. We can add to it, pride means that we are a fool. Okay? Because we know, our scripture tells us time and again that aham savasya prabhavo mata savam pravatate iti madhvavajante mam buddhabhava samamvita. We know that everything is coming from Krishna. He's the source of everything. And this Krishna consciousness, this is a love affair. Why is it that Krishna wants to use his devotees to do many wonderful things? It's actually because he loves you. He likes to see his devotees glorified. It brings his heart joy. But he doesn't like to see pride in his devotee. And when there's pride, it can break the connection between us and Krishna. So when we take the credit for something that Krishna is doing through us, he steps away. And then what happens is very scientific. Then the entire karma that's related to those great activities comes upon us. And because we can't carry that karma, it's just like someone has tied an anvil around your ankle and you're trying to swim. You're trying to come out of the water, but now the anvil is around our ankle. It means that we're weighed down, so we'll be forced to go deep into the ocean and drown. So Bhakti Tirthamaraj would often explain that if you see someone who has power and they lack humility, he said you should run away. Because it's just a matter of time before they misuse that power. Now, there are subtleties to this. You see, it's very interesting. Indra is the king of heaven. He's acting against Prithu Maharaj. It doesn't say that he acted against everyone. You see? So sometimes people could say, this person is envious, this person is not envious. It's not that simple. There may be one person, they're not envious generally, but they're envious of you. You see? Envy has a personal expression. So one devotee may not be envious of the devotees in general, but the person who threatens their power, that's the person they're envious of. You see? They may not act against everyone, but the person who can get in the way of their sense gratification, that may be the person they act against. So it's a very, very subtle science. But envy also means appreciation. You don't envy someone who has nothing, isn't it? The fact that there's some envy means that they appreciate there's something special about this person. There's something special about this devotee. Otherwise, they simply could not bother to envy you. Huh? Now, what do we do with envy? You see? Because envy is this. It's very interesting. Our scripture is a great science. To be very honest with you, in the devotee community and in the outside world, If people really understood the teachings that Prabhupada has given, you would faint. If people really understood what Prabhupada has given, they would take this to the world and they could transform the world with one purport. Because Prabhupada, he's given, it's not just the science of Krishna consciousness, to be honest, although that's the highest science. Adhyatma Vidya, Vidyanam. Krishna says himself, of sciences, I am the supreme science of self-realization. He's not just given that science, ladies and gentlemen. He's given the science of everything. For example, when someone may feel envy. Envy means that you feel value. But it's when you experience value, but in a lower mode. So envy means, I see that there's something very valuable that you have. You have some opulence. But because I'm in ignorance, my reaction to your opulence is I feel envy. If I'm in the mode of passion, my reaction to your opulence, the opulence that you have of value, my reaction is manipulation. So he's opulent or she's opulent. Let me manipulate them. Sometimes people do that with rich people, right? He's got money. Let me flatter him and manipulate him so I can get the opulence. So when there's envy, I want to destroy you for having opulence or destroy your opulence. When there's passion, I want to control your opulence. Manipulation, flattery. When there's goodness, I want to appreciate your opulence. So it's the same quality, but I respond to that quality in different ways. You see? So it's not the quality that people have. It's the mode of material nature that I am in that determines how I respond to everything in the world. So Prabhupada, he's so clever, he knew this. So he understood if we can get them to come to the platform of goodness or Shuddha-sattva, it will solve all their problems. We think the problem is, oh, the problem is this devotee's got too much opulence, or this person has this, or this person doesn't happen that. No, the problem is the mode of material nature that my consciousness is in. So the easiest thing to do, rather than trying to change all the details in the material world, there's one detail that we need to change. The one detail that we need to change is the detail of our consciousness. And whenever we feel agitated by someone else's behavior, we need to remind ourselves, if I can just change this consciousness, I will never have an issue with anyone else's opulence at all. Consciousness is the root cause of all the problems in the world, and consciousness is the root solution. Again, a very interesting science. The world, because, so when Prabhupada was coming to the West, he wrote these prayers. The Jaladutta prayers, he wrote Markine Bhagavata Dham, and what does he say in his prayers? He says the Western world is submerged in the modes of what? What modes? Ignorance and passion. How will they understand your message, Krishna? How will I be able to give them your message? He says, you put them in the prison so you can remove them from the prison. He asks, he begs Krishna, you please empower my words so they'll be able to understand your message. He begs for mercy. So this consciousness is a problem. In the Western world, in the modern world, there's a tendency, because we're in these lower modes, to try to deal with every problem according to the lower modes. When someone tries to deal with an issue in the lowest mode, ignorance, they actually don't even deal with the issue. They ignorance, the mode of ignorance, tamas, tamogun, so to ignorance, ignore. So in the mode of ignorance, people tend to be in denial. It's not happening. It will sort itself out. Climate crisis, no problem. It's going to sort itself out. You know, my health is getting bad. No problem. If I just eat more junk food, it will sort itself out. Ignorance. In the mode of passion, slightly deeper. But with passion, people try to deal with the external symptoms without going deep into the cause. Right? So a lot, not all, but some of modern medicine is like this. Deal with the symptoms. I'm going to give you this drug so you can't feel the fact that your body's going down. mode of goodness, we get to the root cause. What is the underlying issue in any area? And the deeper we go, the more powerful the solution. You see? So what is the purpose of this? What is the practical application? The practical application is that when we're in any situation, we should go deep. What is the fundamental reason why this is happening? And the deeper we can understand the essential reason, then we can find a solution which is going to solve all the issues. The deeper the solution, the more efficient. When the solution is in the mode of goodness, it is more powerful and the result lasts longer. You see? So many people, many of us, whenever we get into unnecessary problems in life, it's because we've made a decision in the lower modes. Now, it's also interesting. Brahma has reminded Indra of his purpose. Don't get distracted by... Sorry, Brahma has reminded Prithu Maharaj of his purpose. Don't get distracted by Indra. It's very interesting. You could say, kill him. You could say, he is irreligious. He shouldn't be doing this. What he's doing is wrong. And it's all true. But more powerful than what other people are doing or are not doing, much more powerful is what we are meant to be doing. The reason why the world is in such bad shape is not because of the bad behavior of bad people. I repeat that. The reason why this planet and any community is in bad shape is not because of the bad behavior of bad people. It's because of the lack of good behavior of good people. The difficulty of being a so-called nice person is we can put so much energy and distraction in stopping other people from doing what they're not meant to be doing. And we put too little energy and focus on making the difference that we can make. So my spiritual master explained this also. Maya tries to stop the good devotee. First thing Maya will try to do, you see, think about your journey to Krishna consciousness. First thing Maya will try to do, just make you atheistic. Don't believe in God. It's God stuff, don't do it at all. Right? That's number one, trick number one. If you get past that test, trick number two. Okay, believe in God, but don't take it seriously. You know, you can come to the temple every now and then and, you know, you can pray to, you know, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, Nehru, Gandhi, whoever you like, you know, anyone you like. It's okay, it's all the same, you know, you're better than most people, you're pious. So she can't stop you being God conscious at all. Then she wants you to do it, but do it superficially, be a hypocrite. You know, believe in God, but do whatever you want materially. If she can't do that, you want to be more serious, then she'll try to frustrate you. Different tests, challenges, obstacles, are you sure you want to do this? Or even it's, okay, become a devotee, but you don't have to take initiation. My God, you don't have to actually submit to a guru. I mean, you're doing more than most people anyway. You're wearing tilak, you're wearing a dhoti or a sari, you come to the Sunday feast, that's enough. You know? Then she'll get your relatives to tell you, you know, everything in balance. Right? So she'll try many different things to hold you back from full surrender. Right? And that's how it is. That's how it is. So the way it works is to try, is there attempts will be made to hold people back. Because the gift that you get by full surrender is the greatest gift, because you get Krishna himself. So these different attempts, they mirror this. Prithu Maharaj, he's doing something which could be considered completely objectively correct. Indra has done something wrong. He deserves to be attacked and punished. Completely correct. But is that what you're meant to be doing? That's a side issue. If every person in the world who was religious and spiritual, if they gave the full energy and time to putting what they are meant to be putting out into the world positively, it would automatically balance out the negative behavior of other people. It would not just balance it, it would more than counteract it. You know? More than. So if we're intelligent and wise, we should always remember this. It's not so much about what other people are doing or not doing. What am I doing? Even in our movement, you see, if I ask you, give me a list of the things that ISKCON should be doing, you can make a long list, isn't it? You can come up with 100 things that ISKCON should be doing. We're not doing this properly. We're not doing enough of this. We need to do more of this. We're doing this the wrong way. You can come up with a list of 100 things. And in our communities, everyone does this. They're aware. But there's one extra step that we often miss. Yes, there are 100 things that we should be doing. Now, of the 100 things that we should be doing in ISKCON, of that 100 items, which of them should you be focusing on? You see? What is your mission within the mission? Now, it doesn't mean that that should be a one-person job. Sometimes our mission with the mission, be part of this group and help them. Be part of this community and help them. For someone in the mission, it's give fantastic classes, seminars. That's your service. For someone else, it's organize and manage. For someone else, it's gather resources for ISKCON, whatever it is. It's very powerful when people act that way, understanding what they're meant to be doing. Here, Prithu Maharaj is being told by Lord Brahma, look, don't worry about Indra. You do what you're meant to do. And by you doing what you're meant to do, you create even more auspiciousness. And the reason is also very interesting. It's explained by Lord Brahma that if you go after Indra, he says it's a Prithu Maharaj, if you attack Indra, his behavior will just become worse. He will introduce even more irreligion, which will plant negative patterns in society, which will make even worse things go on. So you may even kill the person, but they've now created all these negative examples. And we see this. You sometimes see that if people are in a position of responsibility or power, and they behave improperly, other people see their bad behavior and think it must be okay, because he or she's doing it and they are in a position of power. So even if you stop them, the example is already now going. And there are many people, Indra's insecure. So, because he's insecure, what does he do? Insecure means that you have the tendency to overreact or to underreact. You see? An insecure person can't make a balanced response to anything. And what does that insecurity mean? It means lower modes. And what does a lower mode mean? It means your very way of responding creates even more problems for you later on. You see, think about this. Who has seen Indra behave badly in this pastime? Brahma was there, he saw. Right? Atri Muni was there, he saw. Vishnu was there, he saw. Prithu Maharaj's son was there, he saw. All of these august people, great people, they've all seen Indra, he's behaving badly. So what's happening now is not spoken of, but explicitly, but Indra's reputation is going down. Because everyone's seeing he's badly behaved. So people of character, do I want to deal with King Indra? I've seen what he does, I've seen how he behaves. Some people who have lower character, they may associate. But people who've seen, it's like, you know what? I saw that they're actually like this. So respectfully, I may keep a distance now. You see? So it's already damaging. And in a previous verse, very interesting, in the previous verse of the Bhagavatam in this chapter, the statement is made that because Indra has behaved badly, he's already diminished some of his power. Yeah? Where does power come from? The person who behaves badly and is irreligious, you don't have to worry about them so much. They don't have much sukriti or piety. They don't have much power. But the person who's well behaved, they have great potency. If they behave properly and wisely, they will have great potency. So it's not just a question of... See, you can have someone in the world and they're badly behaved and they've got wealth, fame, strength, all these things, and you think, how is that possible? It means that they were pious in their previous life. Rajaputra Chiranjeev Muniputra Maji. Prabhupada tells a story. The sage is walking through the village and he gives a different boon to different personalities. He tells the pure devotee, you can live or die, it makes no difference. He tells the brahmachari, you should die. He tells the prince, you should live as long as possible. Huh? He explains why. He tells the butcher, you shouldn't live and you shouldn't die. The butcher is told, you should not live, you shouldn't die. You're in hell because you're killing these animals every day. So you shouldn't live. But when you go, when you die, you'll go to hell for your bad behavior. So you shouldn't die either. Don't live, don't die. The sage tells the brahmachari, you should die. But because you're performing all these austerities, your next life will be much greater. The sage tells the prince, you should not, and you should live as long as possible. You're behaving sinfully now, but you're getting the benefit of your past pious behavior. So live as long as possible, because when you die, you have to make up for your sinful behavior. And he tells the pure devotee, you can live or die, makes no difference. Because right now you're absorbed in pure devotional service to Krishna. And when you die, you'll just go back to the spiritual world and engage in more pure devotional service to Krishna. So it's only good behavior that gives lasting opulence. Only, nothing else. So it's not just what we have, it's the direction that we're going in as well. It's just like the Pandavas and the Kauravas, both of them were so pious that Krishna was related to them. I mean, that's real piety. But the difference was the Pandavas' piety was going up by their good behavior, and the Kauravas' piety was going down because they were envious of pure devotees. So it's not just what we have, it's the direction that things are going in. Even in the eighth canto, Gajendra the elephant is fighting the alligator in the water. Prabhupada says in the purport in the eighth canto, the elephant was much stronger than the alligator. So you'd expect he's going to win. He's losing. Why is he losing? Because he's stronger, but his strength is going down. The alligator is weaker, but the alligator's strength is going up. So there's a tipping point. At some point, even though one is naturally stronger than the other, at some point a change occurs. So we also have to think like this. It's not enough to have some development of Krishna consciousness. We have to go all the way. In Krishna consciousness, you either become perfected in this life or you die trying. There's no other way. Okay, so we'll stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janitai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Any questions or comments? Yes, can we pass the microphone to Nimai Leela, please?
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Prabhu. So nice to hear from you again.
It's great to see you, and I listen to your classes, and I think they're really wonderful and inspiring, so thank you.
Very wonderful insights you presented today. I really like the point where you mentioned how, you know, it's our gunas, sattvic, rajasic, how they respond to such good advice. Now, in this case, Prithu Maharaj was a very sattvic person. He could comprehend Brahmaji's instruction. I was trying to draw parallels with somebody like Dhruva Maharaj earlier. When Narad Muni gave him a good instruction, he was not willing to accept.
Yes.
Many times I find myself in that role where I cannot hear good advice. So, and though devotees, we are all sincere, but our gunas are still not sattvic. So how can we, you know, learn to pay proper respect to the advice and still at the same time not repress our own expression of ourselves?
Wonderful question. So thank you for that question. There's a few aspects to the science of this. First of all, it takes practice. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, He told us about this practice that he did. He would go to the devotees with pen and paper, and he would just ask them, "What's your advice for me? What do you think I can improve on?" You know? And he would make a point. It doesn't matter what they say, even if he disagreed with it. And so when I first heard that, I thought, how is this going to work? I'll be honest. How's this going to work? But I understood actually when you were asking this question, it wasn't just a question of content. It's a question of samskar. You see? What are we trying to do? We're trying to get into the practice of being able to hear submissively. And we're not actually listening to just what the person is saying. We're listening to what Krishna is saying through the person. You see? The other thing that I've seen in my own life that helps is because I remember that Krishna is very affectionate and compassionate. In my life, I experienced the Krishna as being present and very kind. So even if I get a message from someone and they deliver it in a negative way or in a harsh way, or they themselves don't behave so well, that's secondary. I remember that first and foremost, Krishna's in charge of everything. So there's no accidents. If someone acts inimical but they tell us something, or if someone acts pious and they tell us something, from the spiritual or transcendental perspective, it makes no difference. And I'll explain why, because I meditated on this. You see, devotees have an issue with this. I know some friends who have an issue with this. They say to me, "This devotee, he's like this, he acts like this, he behaves like this, but still he seems to be doing well. He gets position, or he gets projects, or he has influence. It's not fair. Why is Krishna allowing this? I'm pious, I behave properly, this person," etc., etc. I was studying this, and some amazing things came. I was looking at, for example, Chaitanya Charitamrita. It talks about Manodharma. And that word is used in many different meanings. One of the meanings in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Prabhupada elaborates on this in a purple, Manodharma means like the mental gymnastics, mental, like the mind's idea of ethics, morality, and immorality. Now, let me be very clear. We should act in a moral way. Okay, let me be very clear. We should always behave properly. That said, we see someone, we think they're not moral. And we see another person, think, oh, that person's moral. But they're both moral or immoral according to their conditioning. So just because someone is a nice person, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily more spiritual, actually. Because it's why they're nice. Someone can be very nice because they've got no power. You give them power, they become a monster. Yeah? But they have no power now. Right? So, oh, Prabhuji. Yeah, like that. Yeah. But the moment they get some fame or power, they'll start lording it over you. But because they have no power, you think they're nice because they're just such a nice person. No, they're only nice because they have no money. Yeah? Like that. Someone else is impious, and they are impious, but they're attached to a pure devotee. So, Krishna sees, he takes notice of the attachment to the pure devotee because it's above your material conditioning. Piety and impiety are just two types of material conditioning. The impious person, when that material karma runs out, they may be flipped to the other side and be pious. The pious person, when their karma runs out, they may become impious. There are some people, they're very wealthy. And because they've got some wealth, they've got some material security, they'll be nice to people. When they don't have money, if their money runs out, they may become, we call them in the West, hustlers. Right? I've got no money, now I have to act in a cunning way to get money. So it's just a type of material conditioning. And therefore, their piety and impiety is based upon their previous karmic behavior, which has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness unless it's engaged directly in Krishna's service. You see? Someone is wealthy because they were pious in their previous life. It doesn't make any difference. But if they offer that to Krishna, then it's got value. So sometimes we think, oh, they're a nice person. That means that they're a great devotee. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. They're an impious person, right? Therefore, they should make no spiritual advancement whatsoever. Not necessarily. It's the question of transcendence. Yeah? It's a question of how much they are dedicated to a pure devotee. That one thing makes all the difference. You see, it's interesting. Indra is the king of heaven. This is interesting. This is instructive for us in ISKCON. We say in ISKCON, oh, that person's an authority, but they're not behaving properly. Hello, Indra? Hello? Did you notice? Yeah? And Vishnu was there. Did Vishnu remove Indra? No. Did Prithu Maharaj, who's an empowered incarnation of Vishnu, did he remove Indra? No. Did Brahma, who's the head of Asampradaya, did he tell them to remove Indra? Yes or no? No. So sometimes when you see leaders who are not perfect in our movement, don't think that they have to necessarily be removed. This example shows you sometimes they will work with an impious person. This is the example. This Bhagavatam, this is a literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, there's another subtle thing from this pastime. Even though someone may be in a position of power and you can see they're impious, you shouldn't go to either extreme. You shouldn't deny the truth because they're in a position of power. You see? And then you shouldn't necessarily think that because they're not perfect and they're in a position of power, we should go on a campaign to get rid of them. You see? We should take the good. They're doing some service. They've got some competence to do this service. And we should leave the bad. You see? When devotees are immature, then they can't see any nuance. So they go to extremes. Either, oh, this guru likes him. Therefore, he must be perfect and pure. I've seen him behave badly, but no, but Guru Maharaj likes him. So he must be perfect and pure. No, not necessarily. Or, you know, he's not perfect and pure, so everyone should hate him. And I should tell everyone how bad he is. No. No. We should be more sophisticated. There's nuance. Yeah, he's good in these respects. But I also see this tendency is also there. So I will encourage the good, and I'll make sure that I do not let anything which is negative bring me down. Very mature, sophisticated, nuanced way of dealing. So back to your point, first it's a practice. And we practice it because we want to hear from Krishna. And remembering Krishna loves us makes it easier to accept. Because what it means is I'm receiving a communication from a person who's what? Krishna is Trikalagya. He knows my past. He understands all the details of my present. Even things about my present that I'm not aware of, he knows. And he knows what's going to happen to me in the future. So when he says, Prabhu, I want you to do this now. He knows that if I do it, it will set me up, not just now, but for even better experiences in the future. I'll give you an analogy. And Krishna does, I've seen this in my own life, and many of you can relate to this. So, think of your life journey, or your journey in Krishna consciousness. You're walking along some path, and at some point, it's very luscious and green, and there are lots of fruits. And you think it's going to stay like this, but you don't know what's in the future. So while you're walking in this area, Krishna tells you, stop. I want you to carry loads of fruit in your backpack. And you think, why? There's so much fruit. Why don't I just pick some and eat it along the way? But you keep getting the message, no. Get a backpack, a rucksack, pack lots of fruit. You don't understand why, but you do it anyway. Because you're getting the message from Krishna. So you do it. You keep walking along your journey. Later on, you go to sleep one night. When you wake up, there was a forest fire. You survived, but all the area around burned. Now you understand, Krishna told me to carry some fruit, to carry the rucksack. Now you have enough fruit, you have enough to feed yourself until you get out of the forest to another place where there's fruit. So you didn't know what was coming, but Krishna knew. Huh? So there's a story, and there was a king who was given a gift of a sword by a neighboring king. Beautiful, opulent sword. The king was cleaning the sword one day. It's a very sharp sword. When he was cleaning the sword, he cut his finger. He cut the tip of his finger. He was in a lot of pain, bleeding. The king called for his advisor, and he said, my dear advisor, I've cut my finger. What's your understanding of this? The advisor said, my king, this is Krishna's mercy. The king became angry. You're saying that because it didn't happen to you. You're such an impudent, rude, insensitive advisor. Guards, throw this rude advisor, throw him in prison. So the guards grabbed the advisor, throw the advisor in prison. The king, later on that day, goes on his tour of the kingdom. As part of his tour, he goes through the forest and he's captured by cannibals, you know, people eaters. They look at the king and they think, prasadam, right? So then they give the king to their priest. He's going to prepare the king for a sacrifice. The priest is about to start the sacrifice. But then he looks at the king and his face changes. And he says, stop the sacrifice. The priest says, let him go. And everyone's shocked. Why? And he says, I cannot use him in the offering. He's an incomplete specimen. Look at his hand. Part of his finger's missing. So they let the king go. The king runs back to the palace and he realizes, my advisor was right, this is Krishna's mercy. He calls for his advisor and he apologizes, I'm sorry. When you told me that this was Krishna's mercy that I cut my finger, I didn't understand. But when I was in the forest, I was captured by cannibals. They would have killed me and sacrificed me. But because of what happened, as you said, they had to let me go. So now I understand, you're right, this was Krishna's mercy upon me. And the king says, but I do have one question. He said, when you told me this, I got angry with you and I had you thrown in the prison. So I understand how cutting my finger was Krishna's mercy upon me, but I don't understand how having you thrown in prison was Krishna's mercy on you. And the advisor said, my dear king, he said, normally when you go on your tour of the kingdom, he said, normally I come with you. So they would have let you go and they would have sacrificed me instead. So you cutting your fingers, Krishna's mercy upon you, and you becoming angry with me and having me thrown in prison was Krishna's mercy upon me. This is faith. Prithu Maharaj, he shows that faith. When Brahma tells him, don't worry about Indra, focus on what you're meant to be doing. To do that requires humility and it requires detachment. And think about this carefully. It links back to what we said earlier. Because humility and detachment are symptoms of which mode? Goodness. So it goes back again to our consciousness. As we develop the consciousness, as we develop the relationship, as we develop the faith in Krishna, that Krishna is ultimately in charge and he can speak through anyone. And that doesn't mean we follow blindly. Sometimes it's bad advice, so we don't follow blindly. So we do evaluate it. But if we keep getting the same advice and it's good advice, then there's something to consider, you know? But we practice hearing submissively. Because that ability to hear submissively and that ability, that practice of that habit means that whenever you hear the Bhagavatam, whenever you chant the holy names, whenever you hear, especially from pure devotees, it will be much more powerful. There's two things in spiritual life. There's the purity of who we hear from, and then there's a receptivity that we have. Even if you hear from a very pure person, but you're not receptive, you won't get much benefit. So we have to live a life which allows us to practice that. And it's not something that we can turn on and off just with one relationship. It's actually what we cultivate all the time. That's what allows us to progress. That was your question. Thank you for your question. Any other question before we end? Okay, so we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Janitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Thank you very much.